Welcome to the War Report on Public Education. The future of education is an important concern for our time. Where it's heading, how it's evolving, and the influence corporate America has on its outcome. The War Report on Public Education provides critical news, analysis, and perspectives on the what, why, who, where, when, and how of both the new corporate state elites campaign, the Machiavellian agenda to destroy the nation's public education system, and the rising public resistance movement to defend and defeat this Machiavellian agenda. And now, here is our host, Dr. James Avington Miller, Jr.
Everyone, edition of the War Report.
So, James Miller is in a motel in Maine where we put him up for the night. And when I dropped him off there today, I worried and wondered briefly whether or not there was going to be a good internet connection there. They assured me that there would be, but I wasn't 100% sure. So I'm just going to take it. I'm just going to take this show and I'm going to run with it. I've never done this before, but I'm going to try my best. And if anybody wants to call in and help me out, that would be great.
I'll try and help you out.
Oh, James, you're back. Thank God. I felt like I was flying the ship alone there for a minute.
Well, this is something. As he said, I'm in a hotel. I don't know where I am, but this is the first phone call, and I'm in and out. They tell me at the network and Emily, and I told Emily, if you lose me, Emily, you have to run with it until I come back. And I just came back to hear part of it. That was so cool. All right, let me just finish that something. You know I know Emily. She's been on the show before. You know it's Emily who got me to come up here to Maine, not once but twice. Well, today when I saw Emily earlier, I told her, I said, Emily, I'm going to tell you something. I said, when Abraham Lincoln met Harriet Beecher Stowe, Harriet Beecher Stowe wrote Uncle Tom Cabin. Many people say that that book was the catalyst that pushed us into the Civil War. So when Lincoln, who was 6 feet something, and Harriet Beecher Stowe, which I don't know, 5 feet, maybe one or two, what have you, when he met her, he said to her, so you, the little lady, got us all of this starting. So when I saw Emily today, I said, Emily, you are the little lady who got me to Maine, and the rest now is history. That was just a joke from me. She came back on me. Tell them what you said.
Well, I said Harriet Beecher Stowe is actually from my hometown, Brunswick, Maine. And the elementary school in my town where my little niece goes to school is called the Harriet Beecher Stowe School. So I thought that was kind of funny that you had said that because she's an important figure in the town that I grew up in. That's where she actually wrote Uncle Tom's Cabin, was in Brunswick, Maine, where I grew up. So I thought that was kind of cool.
And you said calling you that was a compliment.
Oh, it was. I was very honored. I think it's probably a little over generous of a compliment, but I appreciate it, so thank you.
Okay. All right. Now, for those of you who follow the Facebook group and who go to the talk show homepage on BBS Radio, you know what this show is going to be about. We're going to go deeper into some of the things that Emily has talked about in the past on the show and her blog. We're also going to go into some of her most recent blog because it all connects to what we are all talking about here. And so in many ways, this is really Emily's show, and she could run it without me because we're going to pretty much devote everything to what she's been writing and talking about. And if I do drop out again, Emily's going to continue until I can come back. And if I don't, she's going to run the show. So that's
it. Good.
Let's start with going back to that article that brought me here after I read it and talked to you, and you talked about personalized learning. You recently came out with a post that when you went into more detail and the history of it and how it got to Maine from Alaska and now versions of this, and we said on that show that this thing is going to come to a state, a school district, a neighborhood school near you mark our words, because it's going to happen. And it's now, right. What the president is pushing it, right at the time that the new ESA, E-S-E-A bill is being debated. Mark Zuckerberg, a billionaire, he's buying into it. States across the country are lining up to take it. And you remember what I told you? That one of the things that impressed me the most about your research and then telling me directly what was going on, I said, Maine is the canary in the mine shaft. So many things take place here in Maine first and are tested out before they make their way across the country. Why don't you pick up on that?
Okay. Sorry, my phone is making all kinds of weird noises. But okay, so you want me to take it from there?
Yes.
So you're absolutely right that Maine is one of a handful of states that's kind of leading the charge nationwide in this shift to competency, proficiency-based education. And I think the first thing I want to do is just make people kind of make it clear what competency-based education is, what the other terms are, and how that is directly connected to personalized education, because there's a lot of terms kind of being tossed around. But it's actually a really simple concept. So competency-based education is the same as proficiency-based. Here in Maine, they call it proficiency. Elsewhere, they call it competency. Competency seems to be the more common term. And what it means is that students progress by standard, and they move upon mastery of standards. So it's grades are no longer a picture of this or a piece of this, and it's really individualized, health-paced learning according to standard by standard. And the reason that fits right into both the Common Core state standards, which most of us are using, and also what's called personalized learning, is that if you have this kind of progression, they call it learning progression or learning trajectory, where you're just moving standard by standard by standard, then grades don't matter. And age-based cohorts, which they call them, you know, that all 8 and 9-year-olds typically are in third grade and 9 and 10 are fourth grade, et cetera, that doesn't matter, because it just matters where you are on this particular trajectory in terms of which standards you've mastered. And this is linked with the Common Core state standards, because what has happened is behind the scenes for many years, learning education companies, digital, online, ed tech, startups, Silicon Valley, globally, all of these companies have seen kind of a prime opportunity that if they're all using these common standards, then they can produce these products that will allow us to do what's called personalized learning, where every kid's moving at their own pace, kind of like some of us probably have done as older students, college and graduate students, which is, you know, some of us have done online programs, but they're thinking for K to 12 that kids can use these products and move at their own pace. So it's really Common Core, competency, proficiency-based learning, and digital online learning all are kind of part of this trifecta.
Okay, let's stop there for one moment. Say that again.
Sure.
The trifecta.
So competency,
get it.
Proficiency. Right. Okay. So here's how it goes. Common Core state standards, or whatever standards, which is another kind of piece of the puzzle, is that some of these companies are saying, you know what? If you're changing your standards, no problem. We can adapt our program to you. So they're like throwing in kind of hitches all over the place. But Common Core state standards, competency proficiency based learning, and digital online learning are part of this trifecta that create this personalized learning thing. And so I'll tell you the way I kind of pieced all this together was that last winter I was really kind of becoming involved in the opt-out movement. Even though I'm a teacher, I couldn't opt my kids out, but I was getting really excited that this movement was happening and was really, I was doing a lot of digging and finding out about Smarter Balance. And meanwhile, here in Maine, we're also making this shift towards proficiency-based education. Remember that here in Maine it's called proficiency, elsewhere competency, but same thing. And in Maine, we are actually the first state in the union to have mandated that all students by the year 2000, it was 2017. They got an extension, so I think now it's 2020-21. But by that year, all high schools in the entire state will award diplomas based on proficiency. And if you go do some digging, you can find a report called Navigating the Digital Shift, and it's put out in part from the Foundation for Excellence Education, which is Jeb Bush's foundation, which works hand-in-hand with the American Legislative Exchange Council, which is basically a corporate bill mill. They have a paper called Navigating the Digital Shift, written in part by Tom Vanderark, who anybody who's read my blogs know that I kind of zero in on him because he's a pretty big player. But they have a quote in there saying, eventually all states should have proficiency-based diplomas. And that's the goal. But right now, Maine is the first one to have it. But Maine is part of, so I'm actually looking at a map right now. Maine, New Hampshire, Ohio, West Virginia, Kentucky, Wisconsin, Iowa, Oregon, and California are all part of what's called the Innovation Lab Network, which is run through the Council for Chief State School Officers. And anybody who's kind of done some digging into Common Core and the Park and Smarter Balance know that the CCSCO is a big player, and that they've also gotten millions and millions of dollars from the Gates Foundation. I actually went through myself and added them up when I went to the awarded grant section on the Gates Foundation page. And when I totaled it, it was $90 million from Gates going to the CCSEO. And so anyways, long story short, what I discovered was that in Maine's race for the top application, not only did we agree to sign on to the Common Core State Standards, but we also agreed to become part of this Innovation Lab Network. We were tapped, we were selected, and in a little bit I can kind of explain at least why I think Maine was tapped as part of this experiment. But to be part of this network in proficiency-based, competency-based education has been a huge piece of that Innovation Lab Network. And they actually say in the document that that they want to use states like Maine and the other states I just mentioned to generate proof points so that they can then scale up personalized learning, because that's really, like I said, ultimately what we're talking about, this trifecta, and personalized learning, anytime, anywhere learning. And just because I have it here, I want to read this quote that I actually found. So what happened, just to kind of jump back a little bit further, so the last winter when I was doing all this digging, I was digging like crazy, and I found this document from the Gates Foundation describing their investments related to Common Core, because most of us by now know that the Gates Foundation has poured, I don't know, $2 billion, I think, was one estimate, tons of money into Common Core. But in this document, I was really at the time shocked to see that they had a section on what they call proficiency-based pathways, and that was another place
that
they were.
Hold on for a second and say that
again.
They had a section on
proficiency-based pathways. So there's a section explaining that that's another place where they are investing their resources. And so I'm reading this, and this is back last winter when I really didn't know what proficiency-based education even was. In my school, in the district that I work in, they're transitioning in the high school, and they've transitioned the lower grades. But as a fourth grade teacher, we haven't quite got there yet. They're going grade by grade in the elementary school. So it still was kind of off, not really part of my radar at that time, but kind of increasingly so. But anyways, I'm reading this document, and it's kind of sounding like something like very 1984, really kind of bizarre. But there's this quote that I found that says that we believe that conditions are ripe for creating personalized learning opportunities beyond school and in any time, anywhere fashion, and that we believe it's possible with the convergence of the Common Core State Standards, the work on new standards-based assessments, and the development of new data systems, as well as the rapid growth of technology-enabled experiences. So there you kind of have it in that one quote, the kind of grand plan that they call it, for personalized learning. But if anybody is listening, I'll tell you right now, I'm looking at the map, you can go on a website called, or an organization called INACOL, and it's the International Something Organization for K-12 Online Learning, and they have a map showing where all 50 states in the union are in terms of their shift towards competency-based education and the policies. And I've already mentioned the five states that are part of the Innovation Lab Network. But you can go on to see, you can see that Pennsylvania, Ohio, North Carolina, Tennessee, Atlanta, Florida, Utah, Iowa, no, excuse me, Idaho, Wisconsin.
Let me make a suggestion. Because
sure.
You said it so fast that I'm sure people who, if they really wanted to I'm going to ask you, when the broadcast is over, that you send a personal message to Joe Lieb. You know who Joe is.
Yep.
With that information so that she can put it in the notes that she supplies after every show. She beautiful, copious notes. She will both put it in our notes, and she will put it on the War Report, the group page, and our network page. So, and maybe we'll be able to just hyperlink it, so all people have to do is click it.
Okay, great. So if you, there you go. So if you're curious where your state stands, you can go check out that link on the War Report website. So I don't have to waste my time going through the whole thing. But where was I, James?
You were going through the various states and the ton of money that the Gates.
Yeah, right. And so I'll tell you what happened. So I'm reading this document and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, is this where proficiency-based our mandate came from? And is this really all part of the same kind of plan? And so if anybody has read I called it the Gates Undercover blog, what I did was I emailed a few officials in my state to ask, and they said, no, this is not related to Gates. This in Maine, the push behind it has come from an organization called the Great Schools Partnership and the Nellie Mae Education Foundation. This isn't a Gates initiative here. But sure enough, all you have to do is go to the Gates Foundation website, go to that awarded grant section, which if you haven't done so, I suggest you do. Type in your own state and see, where they've been investing in your own state, because it gives a pretty good clue of what's taking place. And sure enough, the Gates Foundation has granted millions of dollars to Nellie Mae, this foundation based here in New England, to establish and then to give money to groups in New England states in particular to basically generate demand and work towards bringing states towards this proficiency competency. What's that?
I'm going to stop you again. Generate demand. I know what you're talking about, but explain that.
Right. Great. Okay, so I guess that kind of brings me to, I wrote about this recently. I call them the CBE salesmen, the competency-based education salesmen, because they are really investing a lot in selling this idea to the public. And that's what is meant by generating demand, is getting people to want this just the way advertisers do. And so they have kind of constructed a handful of what I call sales pitches to kind of make the public think that this transition is a response to what we're asking for, so that they don't have, it's not like they're coming with an agenda, which they are, and if you go back and, we can talk more, that this is something that they, have been working on for a really long time. But they have some pretty clever sales pitches that they have come in and used to get the basically to get the public to buy into this and to think that this is a really good idea. And one thing that they've done, and you can read more about this, I have a post called Five Secrets of CBE Salesmen. And one thing that they say is a really common argument you'll hear is that we've been using this factory model, this one-size-fits-all approach, for too long, and that competency-based education is the solution to that. And there's a couple pieces about that you have to be careful about, because first of all, when they say that one size fits all, that's I think that's a deliberate co-optation of what we who've been using these standardized tests at the end of each year. One of the things that we have said is that one size doesn't fit all. This doesn't make sense to be judging schools and teachers and students based on this one exam at the end of the year. One size doesn't fit all. Kids are different. And that sentiment, that feeling has then been co-opted. And they're saying that, yeah, we hear you. So have this personalized model, because we know that one size doesn't fit all. And so actually what you'll see is that the same people, these same corporate reformers who have been shoving this test and punish regime down our throats are actually advocating opt-out. And that was another piece that kind of back last spring kind of clued me in that there was something more going on, was when I started to see that that these people like Tom Vanderark, for example, who was a former executive at the Gates Foundation, is saying, yeah, we don't need this big end-of-the-year test. What we need is personalized competency-based learning. And you'll see that, so they're kind of using and rounding up the public with this sentiment and then offering us their own predetermined solution in response. So that's one. You know, and the other piece, too, I encourage people to do a little bit more kind of exploration, because you'll hear it's the factory model, we need to get rid of it. But the fact of the matter is that that's an oversimplification of our history of education. There's a researcher, his name's Dr. Sherman Dorm, and he's written really extensively about how these reformers are actually using that concept of our education system being built to produce factory workers. And that's really an oversimplification, and it's being used as a foil to kind of push this new idea. And then the other piece about that I think is especially ironic is that competency-based education, if you really dig, comes straight out of what's called total quality management. And this is a theory that's used in the corporate world. It comes straight out of the manufacturing sector. I can't remember his name, but I think in the 50s there was Deming, I think, was the one who kind of coined this term. And it's based on these premises of the whole organization needs to have a shared vision. So anybody working with the Reinventing Schools Coalition or the Great Schools Fund here in Maine will recognize that phrase. And then also this concept of continuous improvement. You plan, do, check, revise. And that comes straight out of manufacturing. So their model is actually more akin to a factory-based model than what we have now. So I think that's especially ironic. But anyways, but that's one of their
Okay, let me have a little something here.
Sure.
The sales pitches, you list in that post, you list 5 sales pitches. And what I thought when I read it is that this is nothing more than a regrouping. Remember, Common Core was developed in secrecy. It was pushed down the public's throat. It was not marketed per se like they do other propaganda techniques that they use to get the public to buy into it. And as a result, people are against Common Core, and even going to Weingartner said Common Core is great, but it was the implementation that was wrong. Rad says she's for standards, but she's not for Common Core, because it was developed in secrecy, there was no public buy-in, and et cetera. I see this picture that you outlined as an attempt to say, we'll learn our lesson, and we're going to approach this differently to get the public to buy in,
right,
to a very popular propaganda campaign. And about the factory model, factory comes from a guy who took time and motion studies from manufacturing and thought it would work for an education. Charles Taylor. Taylor.
Right, exactly.
Goes back many, 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 many decades. So this is nothing but a, what does it say? You put lipstick on a pig, it's still a pig.
Right, exactly.
And also, the personalized. When people use the term personalized, they use choice. These are some very, very high-charged words in American culture.
Right.
Freedom, liberty, choice, personalized, individualized. American culture, we eat those. Well, I'll say we because I'm part of the culture, but I don't. They eat this stuff up. So
right.
You carefully pick your words. Personalized. Who's going to be against personalized?
Well, here's another one. Go ahead.
Who's going to be against liberty? Who's going to be against freedom? Who's going to be against democracy? We use these highly charged words to get people to buy in. Then you can take those words, turn them upside down, use those words, but they don't mean the same thing in the context in which you are pushing your ideas. And
right.
Putting all the things that you talked about, and we have now condensed several of your posts to this conversation, I look at it, and the last thing was that all of this, and you mentioned agenda, and I wrote some time ago, this is nothing but part of the Machiavellian agenda that we've been talking about for 20 months on the War Report. Very clever, very smart, and very successful in pulling it off.
Right.
So I thought I need to throw that in.
Yeah, it's maddening. And there's another phrase, too, that I kind of want to touch on that I talk about in my sales pitch, and that is that they claim that competency-based education is student-centered. And that's a really big phrase right now, and you see it everywhere. And that one, I think, that one makes me the angriest, because student-centered, well, what teacher doesn't want to be student-centered? What school doesn't want to be student-centered? That's the whole purpose and heart of what we do, is to, teach our students. That student-centered is who we as teachers are, if you're a true teacher, I think. But what they mean by student-centered is not what we mean. They mean student-centered as in personalized, individualized learning trajectories along these pre-planned, predetermined, predefined standards and outcomes. And that's another term, actually, that believe it or not, comes from the total quality management, the corporate world. And they call it customer-centered. Customer-centered is a really big thing in TQM. Well, they've taken that and they've changed it to student-centered, and people hear that and they immediately think, well, this must be good, because they immediately think that that's being opposed to test-centered or teacher-centered or, I don't know. So people hear student-centered, and I think they get very fooled by that phrase. And I think of all of the kind of sales pitches that these people are using, that one's probably the most deceptive, because that's not what they don't mean. That all of a sudden they don't care about their bottom line, or they don't care about all of these other things that they've been pushing. They do. They do. And they know that for them, student-centered means, I say, if you really want to know what that phrase means, substitute the word device, and you'll have a better sense of what student-centered means to these people. And this is something that this language piece is something I've really thought a lot about since last spring. And I wish there were a way for us, for teachers, for parents, for people who kind of are part of this resistance, to either reclaim some of these phrases or just straight up reject them and say, you know what, we don't want your term student-centered. We don't buy it. We know what you mean by it. We reject it. There's other ones that I think, as long as we are using that same language as them, there's going to be confusion. And I think that confusion is a piece that these reformers really prey on, and they use that confusion to their advantage. Much the same, the way advertisers. I mean, it's really not any different than any type of advertisement that confusion can be manipulated and used to their advantage. And I see it happening all the time. I see it happening to teachers. I see it happening to parents and communities they're hearing these phrases. They're seeing these sales pitches and they're buying into it. And it's not what they think it is. And Yeah, so that's a
Go ahead, finish.
Oh, no, you go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, just before I left homecoming on the trip, I did a five weeks and five episodes on neoliberalism. And one of the things that I talked about was neoliberal. What does it say, what it is, what it means, or what have you? And I broke it down in that neo means new. We get that. Liberal, right. Liberalism. When people hear that, they think all the liberal freedoms that we seek in our democracy, the people who are pushing the ideology that we call neoliberalism, they don't mean that. They co-opted the word. When they use liberal, it's liberalize the environment for business to run unfettered.
Right.
Away with federal, state, local legislation, laws that impose requirements on business. In other words, let business run free. Liberal means freedom for business to run unfettered by government at any and all levels. So when they use liberal, they don't mean the same thing that you and I in the public think when they say liberal.
Right.
That is a deliberate strategy. That's no accident. That's calculated. And in many cases, all of this has been calculated over decades and a timetable of implementation that we had no idea about.
Right.
I said this, and I want to repeat myself over and over again, but the Machiavellian agenda, as I laid it out before I left home, I have to say it's brilliant. It's evil as hell, but it's brilliant. And execution, I won't say it's flawless, but it's Sun Tzu would be very proud of it.
Right.
So what you're saying is what has historically been happening, and especially over the last 30, 35 years.
Right.
Taking language that is highly charged, using it deceptively, as I say, Trojan horse-wise, to get the public to buy into something that is not reality.
Right.
And it's a deliberate
false. It is. And there's another phrase that I talked about in here, and that is that another thing that that competency-based, the sales pitch, they call it student-centered, they call it, and it's a response to one size fits all, but they also say that it's going to get our kids more motivated. And that's another super highly charged term. Well, what teacher doesn't want their children to be motivated? What parent doesn't want their kid to be motivated? But look closely at what they mean by motivated. What they mean, and I argue this, I think what they mean is more akin to addiction, because, and I know that sounds strong, but if you look at most of these digital and online programs that they are using for education, they all have a system of rewards where you get points, you get stars, you get badges, you move to new levels. It's game based. It's that same, it plays on that same part of our brain, those dopamine receptors, as gambling, as cigarette smoking, as junk food, that kind of that pleasure sense deep in our brain, that and that's what they mean by motivated. And if you look at who's really pushing this, there's a big push towards game-based learning. And they say it gets kids motivated. No, what it does is it gets kids in that kind of zombie video game-like state that looks like motivation, but it's not. And if you ask kids, and I've seen this happen in my own classroom, if you ask kids and who are using an activity like that, well, what is it? What are you doing? What's the point of this? They'll say to get more points, or to get to the next level, or to get the rocket ship to take off, or to get the basketball in the hoop. And that's what they think the purpose of what they're doing is. And you better believe that the people designing these activities and these games, these game-based, rewards-based systems know exactly what they're doing and exactly how that operates on the
screen. We have a caller. Let's bring our caller.
Sure.
Hi, caller. Are you still there?
Hi. Yes, I'm here. Emily, it's Allison. I figured out a way to log call in.
Yay. Hi, Allison. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. I didn't know when was a good time, so I just thought I'd be available. But I've been working on the extended learning opportunity stuff today, so I didn't know if you were going to go into that at some point.
The community-based learning piece?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know what? That's funny to bring that up because that's a whole other piece of this kind of puzzle that we're trying to piece together. And
and I don't mean to take you off track.
No, that's fine. Something that Allison had mentioned is I'm glad you bring that up right now because it's another example of how language is being used to kind of, I would say, trick us into thinking that this is something for us. So another piece you'll hear a lot about these community schools, and in Maine we had a bill passed to kind of implement, they call them community schools. But as Allison has done, if you look, there's a direct connection between the quote-unquote community schools. And again, who doesn't want a school in their community? That's what we're all asking for. Well, they need something, again, quite different. They need a place where kids can work towards these competencies in places outside the school and in the community so that they can gain credit or prove mastery of competencies in places beyond just the school building. So in that case, it's we're working almost toward an apprenticeship model, which, you know, it's, I'm just going to say this. It's funny that you bring this up, and I hesitate to say this because it kind of, I don't say to fearmonger, but if you look up the type of schooling system that they used in the Soviet Union in mid-century, it's very similar to what's being pushed right now in terms of the progression based on competency and very school-to-work oriented rather than the more liberal arts type of education that we've been used to. So there's similarities there that I think people might be interested to kind of dig a little bit beneath the surface on that. But you're absolutely right, Allison, that's another place where I think we are being deceived by the language that's being used, and that people who who want what's best for our kids and for our communities hear these things. And unless you have the time or the kind of, like me, I call it, I got my hyper-focus because I'm so obsessed with figuring out the truth of this. You know, unless you have the time for that, you're not going to know. And you're going to hear these things and you're going to kind of be swept along with it and not even realize that it's almost like a bait and a switch, and that language is really being used to manipulate us. So that's a piece that I wanted to kind of dig into more. Is that
the learning anytime, anywhere?
Right. And that's,
you know,
exactly.
You can learn at your own pace anytime in the world. The city is your classroom, kind of.
Right.
You know, and so, I think my concern is that as a parent, that, like, who is monitoring the quality of those experiences? Like, if your child is getting a proficiency credit through a community partner, who's guaranteeing on the other end that that's a good experience, that it's a safe experience, that it's actually something that's not just, you know, free intern labor? I think that there's a lot of questions around outsourcing instruction into the community.
And, you know, I'm glad you mentioned that, too, because that's another...
We only have about 5 minutes, and I want to get to your letter tomorrow today.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
no. Okay. We'll keep
going. No, I'll just ring off. I just wanted to put that in.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye, sugar. Bye.
Okay.
I'm sorry, but I need some time to tell everyone about what's been happening this week, and so need to get to that, too.
Oh, sure.
You wrote a letter. I'm calling him Mark as if I know him. you actually know the guy. Tell
people
who Mark is. Okay,
right.
But hell, I don't know him at all. Okay, and this stage my life, don't care to know. But tell people who we're talking about when we say Mark, and tell about the letter and how you know of this guy, how you know him.
Sure. So I was really lucky. I went to Phillips Exeter Academy in New Hampshire, a private boarding school for 3 years of high school. And I was a sophomore when Mark Zuckerberg, the creator of Facebook, was a senior there. We I didn't know him personally. We had one class at one time together. We had Latin. I know we had the same education background. We had the same type of experience at Exeter, which was a really, really incredible education. And so when a friend of mine yesterday sent me a link to Mark Zuckerberg's personal Facebook page that he's endorsing personalized learning, it said he and his wife are passionate about it, and they've teamed up with Summit Academy or Summit Public Schools to push this model, I just about died. Mm-hmm. I couldn't even believe it, because if you get a chance, I wrote him an open letter that I post in my blog. Well, the type of experience that we got at Exeter is nothing like what personalized quote unquote learning is as it's being pushed to the Gates Foundation and all these other organizations. And one of the kind of the key pieces that I tried to draw to his attention is that, if somebody had come in from the outside to one of our classes at Exeter and said, "What's your learning target? How will you know if you've met it?" And if we in these classes had been kind of held hostage to these competencies, outcomes, the teachers at Exeter, the students would have just been like, "You have got to be kidding me. It would never have happened." But that's exactly what's happening in public schools right now. That's exactly what's happening, is we are being held hostage to these competencies, standards, learning progressions, those people who are making the shift towards proficiency, competency-based education, it's becoming even more so, because you can't move on until you've proven that you've mastered it. What happens to literature studies? What happens to debate? What happens to not all learning has an end outcome. Sometimes you're digging to try to find out what the author really meant when they wrote a particular sentence, or sometimes you're digging to try to find out how what happened 50 years ago connects to now. And that, to me, is a huge piece of a really great education. Well, what happens to that in this system? That's what we got at Exeter. It's not what personalized learning allows for. And so the fact that Mark Zuckerberg is advocating for this system strikes me as either one of two things. Either he truly doesn't know what it is he's advocating, and he's been, like so many people, kind of duped by this language piece that we've been talking about, and I think that's very, very possible, that he's heard those words and he wants to do good with his fortune, and he's hearing these things and it sounds like a good idea, or it's not so positive, maybe he isn't as as good of a guy as I want to give him credit for. But either
you're
way,
stumbling, you're stumbling there. You don't want to call him what I would call him.
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. I want to assume the best. I would love for him to respond, but I guess I kind of wanted to draw that out into the light and to say, look, what you're advocating is nothing like the kind of education that we got. And then that kind of brings us to, what's the point? So some people say, yeah, but we're evolving. Well, are some people supposed to get that kind of education that we got, but everybody else gets this, competency computerized, standardized, very tightly controlled, very tightly measured type of education, but then a small select few get this type of Exeter education? Because that doesn't sound like any type of solution that just doesn't seem right to me. So I wrote it, and today I hit 10,000 people viewed my blog today, which I was pretty excited
about. Say that again.
10,000 people viewed it. So I gave myself a little personal celebration for that. I thought that was pretty cool. And I think, I think the reason people are reading it and sharing it is that that this is a sentiment that people are anxious to have people saying, and that there's so much coming from the other side, that to hear the opposite side is, I think people are longing for that. So I'm kind of excited about it. But anyways, there's a lot we can. So we only have a couple more minutes left, because there was I don't know. Where are we going? I wanted to talk just a tiny bit more about kind of how long-term this plan has been. Do we have time for me to briefly mention that?
Yeah, make it brief.
Make it brief. Okay. Well, I guess that's just another piece. I wrote another blog post. I call it the grand plan, because what's really interesting is that this shift towards competency personalized learning has really been in the works for at least 15 years. Tom Vanderark from the Gates Foundation was actually here in Maine in 2002 awarding a $10 million grant to move schools toward a proficiency. They called it the Promising Futures Grant. And a friend of mine, we did a Freedom of Access Act, which I encourage people to do more of those because they're really interesting. You can get a lot more information than you might realize. And sure enough, here in 2002, he was encouraging our education commissioner to move our schools to online models and to experiment with that. And then there's another article of him saying, he's frustrated that it's taking so long for the shift to happen. He thought it would happen fast. The business world changes up fast. Why isn't education moving more quickly? And so I find it really funny that just a few years later, he's partner of Learn Capital, and he oversees this giant portfolio of digital and online learning companies. And then he's a part of this group of politicians called Digital Learning Now. Like, we want it now. I'm not going to wait any longer. It's going to happen now. And those policies then got adopted by ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, and then somehow they make their way to the White House, because this is another piece I'm going to talk about, the testing action plan. When I heard Obama come on and say, you know what, we're hearing you, my first thought was, I need to see what's in it, because I bet I know. Because I bet this is not really a response to the people. I bet that this is, once again, a way to kind of pretend and then push the agenda. Well, sure enough, in that action plan is $25 million of grants for states to move towards competency-based testing plans. It says the words competency-based several times. And the fact is, you know, I knew that was going to be in there. And so even though I knew it, I saw it and I pretty much fell off my chair, because it was like, how is this okay? That we are being used, you know, to make it seem like our politicians and our government is responding to us, when in reality, there's a plan that's been behind the scenes. And just one more piece really quickly. So I have one more piece really quickly.
Go ahead.
No, why don't you go ahead? I'll blog about it. Go ahead.
Okay. All right, folks. I got about 5 minutes left here. This week, last time we talked, I was in Massachusetts. I left Massachusetts Friday to get here in Maine. Yesterday, I interviewed something like 4 or 5 people yesterday. This morning, I interviewed a father and son. And what really is impressing me the most, besides talking to the people, the father and son, they drove 2.5 hours one way to get to me so that we could have the conversation. And driving 2.5 hours back, 5 hours. That, to me, was really incredible. Yesterday, same thing. People here, I mean, Maine is rural, so there's a lot of distance between towns and what have you. But people are driving incredible distance, 100, 150 miles one way, to come in to tell their stories. That speaks volumes to me in terms of how much people want to have their voices heard, because they haven't had an opportunity to have their voices heard. Another thing that has cropped up, and I mentioned last week, but I didn't want to go into it, and I don't want to go into it again, is that before coming out, I anticipated what I call the fear factor. And I'm running into it every state thus far, and many of the interviews. By the fear factor, I mean this, especially among teachers. teachers, they want to talk. They want to have the conversation. They want to have their voices heard. But they are so afraid of coming forward and actually putting their voices on tape to be heard and seen by anyone else. I've had so many teachers call and say they want to be a part of the program. They're excited about it, only to have them not show up. I have so many teachers who will come and up to the last minute, they're debating with themselves, and if they brought someone else, they're debating whether or not they're going to actually do this. I'm sitting here holding the camera, and it's not rolling, trying to give them time to make the decision. And then I have teachers who make that hard decision, do the interview, the next day will call me and say, can you take this part out? Can you cover my face? Can you mute my voice? Not mute in terms of not being here, distort my voice. And I understand this, and I tell everybody before I start the interview, well, this is what I'm doing, and you need to think of this if you haven't already thought about it. Maybe putting a target on your back. And some people haven't really thought about it, and when they start thinking about it, they get so frightened that they can't go through with it. That's disturbing to me, people. That is truly disturbing. And we supposedly live in a country where freedom of speech is a constitutional right. It's a right that the government is supposed to protect us and our ability to engage in freedom of speech, the First Amendment thing. I know and you know that principals, superintendents, school boards have gone after teachers with a vengeance. They've muted our First Amendment rights. They have sown fear at the highest level all across the country. They have punished people from firing them to reassigning them. I remember a teacher in Florida. They went after her by taking her out of the classroom, giving her a shopping cart almost, and she had to run around pushing this cart with her books and everything that she had, looking for a classroom to be able to do her thing. It is creeping up in the work here, and I have to mention it. Also, the people in Massachusetts, they were phenomenal. I said the people who were my ground support in the three cities that I did interviewing in, I stayed in, was incredible. Back here in Maine, almost becoming like home, the people here have been the people here like they were the first time. Literally saying to me, you're at home. My house is your house. Anything in the refrigerator, the whole nine yards. I'm somewhat overwhelmed in the sense that people, some of them, I wasn't friends with on Facebook. They don't listen to the War Report. But they have opened their arms and welcomed me as if I was a long-term friend or long-lost family member. That's an incredible part of this journey so far. I leave tomorrow. 13 hours to get to Buffalo. Trains, planes, cars, the whole nine yards. 13 hours, people. It's going to be a long, long day. I'll be in touch for a while. And the last thing I want to say is to say, folks, I need your support. I'm not getting it. That's disheartening to me. When I say I need your support, I need you to go to my GoFundMe campaign and contribute. I'm doing this out of my pocket, and I have no pocket. So this is one of the last times I'll make this plea, because I'm like doing it. But I, at this point, it's disheartening that the people who listen to the show, the people who come through the War Report group page, people who come to my personal page, are not showing up and supporting the project. Okay? Time is up. Emily, thank you so much. And you know you're going to be doing this again and again and again. So with that, I have to say goodbye. I'm over my time. Talk to you from Buffalo, New York. Good evening, everyone.
Join us again next time as we explore and become aware of the most pressing problem of our time, education, corporate America, and their unholy alliance.